Hello, everyone. Welcome to a very special episode of Lower Decks. It's very special because we are almost done with Lower Decks. It's a sad day. It's a very, very sad day. Only two Lower Decks episodes left for Uncanny Tracks after this. We are Uncanny Tracks. I am Bob in the Southland. That is Matt in Cascadia. Tonight we are covering episode 9 of season 5 of Lower Decks Fissure Quest, as well as episode 9 of season 1 of Lower Decks Crisis Point from the 11th of October 2020. Matt, how in the world are you doing tonight?
Doing great, Bob, man. Fissure Quest, the name alone. All I can think about are anal fissures. It's gross.
I think that was intentional, although
it was.
Based off where the episode went, it didn't really feel like it was intentional.
No, it was interesting. And then Crisis Point, every time Bob writes it, he puts PT, and I think Crisis Part, and he left something off, and it messes me up, because I think it's DC Comics.
Matt, to start with in Fissure Quest, did you like the return of William Boimler? Did you like how sad Brad Boimler was over the Fink's death of his clone?
I mean, yeah, tell me, Bob, if you end up having this kind of transport incident or accident where you create another duplicate of yourself or something like that, is the new version considered a clone? Is that how that works in Star Trek?
I think so. I think you'd have to, yeah.
So it's the same idea. It's the same concept.
It's Star Trek's Clone Saga.
Yeah, it really is.
I did want to ask you something here that I didn't think to put in the notes. So when they first introduced William Boimler in this episode, I think I just misunderstood it at first, but I thought they were saying he was some sort of quantum universe duplicate of the duplicate. Does that make sense?
Yeah, Bob, I'm going to be honest with you, too. I'm glad you came out first about it. I was confused as well and thought the exact same thing you did, and it threw me off. Because I went back and watched some stuff, the show, and it's very confusing. I don't know what they're supposed to actually be, Boimler-wise.
Okay, but my guess based off the end is this is the actual transporter clone.
Correct.
Boimler, who is just in the quantum universe. But however they set it up at the beginning of the episode, it made me think that, oh, William Boimler is dead, but in the multiverse, there is a quantum version of William Boimler.
Yeah, see, I thought the same thing. I didn't understand, but apparently he has assembled this crew throughout the multiverse, and this is the Boimler clone or whatever from the transporter accident that did create him in the universe or Brad Boimler.
Well, were you surprised to see our clone commanding a Defiant-class starship for Section 31?
Yeah, he has a really cool job, Bob, but I feel like he has the same disdain you have for multiverses.
Oh, he absolutely does, and he's absolutely right. But the only difference is, if my job was to slaughter the multiverse, I would enjoy it.
You probably would, Bob. Who would you collect, though, Bob? Because he has a nice crew here. I really like his crew.
I don't know who I'd collect, but I do like his collection. In a way, you asking me who I would collect is almost like asking me to go back on my hate for the multiverse, but... You want to run down who he's collected, Matt?
Yeah, so he's got a T'Pol from Enterprise, right? You got Curzon Dax, not Jadzia, Curzon. You got Dr. Garrick and his hollow husband, who is our man Bashir.
Yeah, but as a hologram.
Yes. That's the thing. We'll talk about it in a second, but they just wouldn't go all the way, Bob. And then you have all the Kims.
You have all the Kims. It's a pretty interesting crew. I did want to ask, I know you're familiar with all the others, but I guess I have a question for you about the Kims. But do you know T'Pol from Enterprise at all? Or do you just vaguely remember her from ads for Enterprise?
She's supposed to be the Spock of Enterprise. That was always my understanding. And she was also sort of, the eye candy of, as well.
Yeah,
that was
sort of the Seven of Nine, I was about to say.
Right.
Although, like Seven of Nine, I would say she has a depth of character that just saying that she's the eye. Obviously, you're justified in saying she's the eye candy because that's how the show is using her. But she has a depth of character that isn't captured by that label.
Oh, I agree. 100%. I'm sure there is. I just didn't watch the show. But as someone looking in, that's what they were trying to do with her, to draw in your average man who wasn't going to watch Enterprise.
Indeed. It was UPN and the folks. It was a strange time. So I did actually want to ask, do you remember the original series episode, Amok Time, where Spock goes through Ponfar?
I do remember that.
Do you remember the old elder Vulcan lady from that episode, T'Pring?
Yeah.
You know, originally, T'Pol was supposed to be a younger T'Pring, I think, was the pitch for that show.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. Now, do we see T'Pring in Strange New Worlds?
I don't think we've seen her in Strange New Worlds. I might be wrong about this because it's been about 10 years since I've watched Enterprise, But there is at least a two-parter, maybe a three-parter, set on Vulcan in season 4 of the Enterprise. And I believe a young T'Pring is in that, although I might be wrong.
Okay. Yeah, I love it when they do these continuity things like this. Makes me so happy. Brings it all.
Indeed. Well, Matt, to kind of go back to Will Boimler's role as the hater of the multiverse, I really, really appreciated him screaming, "It's just lazy derivative remixes," which is true. That's what it is.
That's what we like, Bob. We like things that seem familiar, but just aren't quite the same, and we like to point out the differences. That is life, Bob.
In a way, Matt, I am William Boimler because I am doing this podcast with you in a time when multiverse is ascendant in narrative. And so most of what we do in this podcast is point out multiversal counterparts and then evaluate them, right?
That's exactly what we do about Bat's life.
Oh, man. To again go to the Bob's the Hypocrite line, I did think it was pretty funny that Engineer Mariner comes from a timeline where instead of Riker getting duplicated, Troy got duplicated.
That's the truth. Interesting little side note here, Bob. There's an academy in the school system I work for, and I got to visit there this week. And I noticed that the names on the outside of the doors were strange. And it started very simple. This one was like counselor. That's not unusual. You have counselors in schools. That's just not usually a word that's used. That's thrown around a lot. It's usually other stuff is used. So it's okay, nothing weird there. Then I go to this other room and it says 10 forward lounge. And I'm like, this is strange. Then I go to this other room and it said ready room. And someone's a Star Trek fan or in the Marines or something. So I found one of my friends that works there. And I was like, hey, what's up with this? Found out the principal's a huge Star Trek nerd and has named all like the common areas after Star Trek things. The bus areas, the shuttle bay. Where were these people when I was in school?
Well, on the one hand, it's like, where were they? On the other hand, if your principal had done that, you would have hated it.
Yeah, that's true.
I do have to ask, does the principal of this academy, I'm assuming it's he, but has he labeled a room ops? And if so, what happens in that room?
I don't know, Bob, but I'm going to find out for you. That is what I will do.
Because that is one of my favorite jokes of this episode, is that Kim says no one knows what we do in ops, which is true. I remember as a kid, and still to a certain extent now, I was always very confused. What do Data and Kim actually do on the starship? It also was it didn't help that on DS9, the bridge was called Ops. That added to Bob's confusion.
Ops is just short for operations. I got that part.
That's correct.
That would just be the everyday run-of-the-mill stuff they have to do, I guess, if they need somebody to do this.
In practice, it seems they basically replace the science officer position with operations.
Right.
Although there are still science officers on the Enterprise D and Voyager, but Data and Kim fulfill the role mostly that I think Spock would in terms of giving orders and scan this, scan that.
Yeah, I you're right. That is a very confusing position. Like, I don't even think, maybe that's just a catch-all for people who don't know what they want to be.
The other thing, although there would be times when LaForge and Torres would be on the bridge at a station. But even though they still communicate with engineering, it's a little bit of the science officer, it's a little bit of engineering, and then it's a little bit of the navigator, too, because you still have like a helmsman, but you no longer have a navigator on the Enterprise D or the Voyager.
I guess it's like being in a position, but not having, there's no real command role to it. So that may be a part of it as well.
Well, sort of, but although.
And then you think of Data, yeah.
He is the second officer, but him being the second officer is distinct from him being the operations officer. Because obviously
right.
Harry Kim's not the second officer.
This is just a conundrum. So hit us up on X. Hit us up on X, folks, if you understand
this. Yeah. If you can explain operations to me, please do. Even at this late date, I still need it explained. I think I was going to ask about Kim, Matt. So you obviously know the joke about Harry Kim never getting promoted, but did you get the joke of why there's so many Kims on the ship?
I didn't really know what was going on
there. So kind of like O'Brien, Kim was the guy on Voyager who it's okay, you need to make a character suffer this season, one episode per season. And he gets duplicated a lot, including, I believe there's one story where the original Kim actually gets killed, but a duplicate from a mirror Voyager replaces him.
Okay. So just a ton of Kims that are out there somewhere. In the Delta Quadrant. Okay.
Exactly. Well, Matt, as older men, yeah, as you might say, men of a certain weight, why does T'Pol have to be coming at us like this when she's declaring to Curzon that sodium is not a life?
I love sodium, Bob. That is like my favorite thing. Man, I love salt. I love anything with salt on it. Crackers, cookies. God, I love it. Give me all the salt. Bob, I ate a whole carton of Goldfish crackers the other day. Whole
Damn,
carton,
son.
Bob. It was awful.
I
just shared some with the dog, and that's how I made myself feel better. Because I was like, you know what? I gave the dog a bunch of
them.
I'm good. I gave the dog a bunch, maybe an eighth of what was.
Matt's measuring it out on his cocaine scale.
Yeah, but you're right. Yeah, I don't like my lower decks calling me out. I don't appreciate that, lower decks.
Yeah, no thanks, T'Pol. Go back to the multiverse.
Yes.
Leave us in peace to enjoy our bad processed food. I do have to say, it was very amusing to see a Defiant-class starship land in a bog, or just having landed in a bog, the image of it sitting in a bog. That amused me.
Defiant-class is still my favorite, like, ship shape other than Excelsior. I'm so basic, but yeah, it's just...
I like that you like the two opposites. You like the most sleek and the least.
Yes, yeah. I have, like, both ends of the spectrum.
Such is the duality of Matt. Oh, man. I got really excited when we had our big reveal of a guest star. This was partially because we just watched, I had my friends over for dinner and a movie, and we watched the new Salem's Lot movie on Max.
Oh, okay.
Not bad, but I didn't think was very good. I think I prefer the miniseries from the 80s. But in that, the actress who plays Lily Sloane is the doctor in Salem's Lot, and we were like shocked at how good she looked. As the saying goes, black doesn't crack, and she just looks great. And then we were looking her up, and she's in her 70s, man.
Yeah.
She's 75. She just looks astonishing.
She looked great here.
Yeah. And it was great to see her animated here. We get Lily from First Contact, and she's in an Enterprise uniform.
I was psyched because I knew who it was, even though she was in a uniform. I hadn't seen her before. I've seen animated. I've seen Zephyr Cochran animated in Lower Decks. I've seen Lily Sloane animated in Lower Decks.
Oh, yeah, that's right, because it was Cochran season 3, I think.
Yeah, with the amusement park.
Yeah, where they did a whole... That's right, they did... I think we might have even bemoaned a little bit that they did a whole First Contact riff, but there was no Lily.
Yeah, well, they heard us. They brought her in.
They heard us. Man, the show does hear us. It takes them like 2 years to... Terrible. I said feedback, but they do seem to hear. Oh, man. I did want to say, I think it was Mariner who said this, or maybe it was Lily Sloane, who said, we don't need to meet new species. And that was, wow, that's the most narcissistic thing I've ever heard said in Star Trek.
Right. They've met plenty of new people, Bob. They don't need to meet any new more. We've got them all. We're good.
Well, Matt, this episode really provided a moral conundrum for me. Because, as you may know, Boimler and Harry Kim are two of my least favorite characters in Star Trek. I hate them both with the passion of a thousand suns. And having to agree with both of them about how evil the multiverse is and how it needs to be destroyed, I really didn't like that the episode was dedicated to making me agree with Boimler and Kim.
Yeah, Bob, see, these characters that you hate, deep down, they're just you. Because you hate yourself.
I do. That's true. I do hate myself. I would say, to defend myself, I think Boimler and Kim represents the worst parts of me, the parts of me I would be if I did not have ironic self-awareness.
There you are, Bob. You'd probably be a lot like me.
Oh, man. To, on a lighter note, to get away from our psychodrama that we disguise as a podcast, I really did like Kim's joke to Boimler that spewing engineering nonsense won't work on me. I've got two pips.
Were you counting up all the pips on the other Kim? Some didn't have pips. Some didn't have any kind of uniform that like specified they were part of Starfleet.
Yeah, some had rank insignia, but I didn't know how to read it because I'm not that down with the minutiae of rank.
Yeah, they were all over the place with like the ranks. It was funny, but no one had more than two pips. He was definitely the best.
I really did like Mariner kind of echoing Wrath of Khan when she yells, "Damn you, two-tip Kim." But I also thought it was really funny that two-pip Kims like pitch to all the one-pip Kims. It kind of reminded me of Blade Runner, where a better life awaits you.
Kims suck everywhere.
Yeah, no, true that. Except for two-pip Kim. I like two-pip.
That's one of those Marvel anchor points, Bob.
Indeed. It's a constant across all you. I do have to say, Boimler freaking out at the end of the episode did make for a good cliffhanger.
Yeah. How's it all going to
end? Our Boimler, I should say.
How's it all going to end, Bob?
Do you think we're actually going to see a... I was assuming that you were right and we were going to see a future vision of the ranked up lower deckers. But I think given that we've seen just a different Boimler be a captain, we don't necessarily need to see the future vision. Does that make sense?
I mean, it does make sense, right? I mean, we've seen pretty much all. I think we're going to be for some kind of crazy, really good ending here, but something. I'm really getting my hopes up, but they really spoiled us with this episode and all the cameos. So
they did.
I don't know what direction they're going to go next with that part, because I'm thinking maybe they're going to pull back on cameos and just focus on the actual cast and the storytelling.
That's more what I'm thinking. It seems like they set themselves up where they either have to really double down and do some crazy cameos. Would be in the tradition of the show, right? This is spoilers for our upcoming season one finale coverage in 2 weeks. But if I'm remembering right, in the season one finale, that's when Troy, Riker, and the Titans show up.
Correct.
Right? On the one hand, they might double down and get really hog wild with cameos. But on the other hand, I think you're right that they may have gotten their cameo juice out, and so dial it back and focus on the characters.
What a gross way to put that, their cameo juice.
I didn't mean it in a nasty way. In hindsight, I see how it could go down in a nasty way. I do just want to establish, though, you see what I wasn't trying to go.
I understand, Bob. It's okay.
I appreciate your acknowledgement. It means the world to me.
But, Bob, you need to listen to what my prediction is.
Hit me with your prediction, Matt.
Cisco, Bob.
Oh, snap. I don't think so, but hey, I've been wrong before.
For the 32nd time, Bob, in this podcast history, I am predicting that Cisco...
I was about to say, would this be the fourth time you've predicted a Cisco cameo since you've predicted this? I believe a Cisco cameo at the end of every Picard season.
Every Picard season, at least two Lower Deck seasons.
Oh, you did? Yeah, I didn't know you predicted it for Lower Deck.
Pretty sure I did for some of the earlier seasons.
Look, I will say, I don't think you're right. From what I've heard, Avery Brooks is done and doesn't have interest in this anymore. If you were to be right, I think this is actually probably the way Avery Brooks would want to come back, animated and not too much effort.
Yeah, I agree. Well, Bob, with that being said, though, our character of the episode for this week is a DS9 character that I thought I would never see again, but I was happy to see in this incarnation, and that would be Garak. But it was Dr. Garak. Still coming up with the quips, still doing the awesome stuff, still being a spy, something off about him.
I like seeing Dr. Garak a lot. I like seeing his hollow husband a lot. I did want to ask, since you alluded to this at the start, and I should have put it in the notes, do you think they made Dr. Garak's hollow husband a hologram out of cowardice?
Yes.
Or do you think they did it to make a joke?
I think they did it out of cowardice because they knew that would be it would cause a lot more controversy if it wasn't a hologram.
I think they did it as a joke about cowardice, although you could argue at a certain point making the joke and not doing the thing, or yeah, it's the same. It's just cowardice.
Yeah.
I will say, you may well be right, and I'm not disagreeing with you strongly, but they did show Garak and his hollow husband kissing for a pretty long time. Props for that.
Just a hologram, Bob. It's just a hologram. We want the real thing. Come on.
That every time I go to a gay bar, that's what I tell myself.
Well, Bob, your character, on the other hand.
I was going to go with T'Pol. I really liked seeing her. I thought she was great. I also thought it did actually raise an interesting storytelling dynamic of she was being tight with Curzon Dax. And actually, if you think about it, Vulcan and Trill friendships do have interesting potential because Vulcans are so long-lived, they can see multiple Trill hosts, potentially. And so that, I think that's could be a really interesting dimension of a friendship. That said, I didn't really like the character of Curzon Dax. I didn't think they did Curzon Dax any particular justice.
No, not at all.
Episode. So it was also, on the one hand, T'Pol was a little bit dragged down by her association with Curzon Dax. But on the other hand, I like seeing her. I'm fond of her from Enterprise. And I enjoyed the ideas it sparked in me about Vulcans and Trills.
Yeah. All right, Bob. Well, let's move on to Crisis Point.
Yeah. So to open up with my favorite line from Mariner, this is her yelling at her mom, "You think I need therapy? It's the 80s, dude. We don't have psychiatric problems."
That's right, Bob. The 2380s.
I really did love Freeman's pitch to, was it the lizard people?
Yes, the lizard people.
Will you stop eating people if we give you a food replicator?
Yeah. Okay. How does that work, Bob? She just got on to her daughter, which I'm just going to go into here, Bob. I completely forgot that Mariner and Freeman don't make everyone aware that they're mother and daughter in the first season. Like, that's a secret. Did you remember this?
Yes, I did.
Okay, I'm just going to assume I'm stupid because I don't remember this.
Well, I don't think a lot of the episodes in season one have hinged on that.
I think you're right. So she gets on to her daughter and about interfering with her politics, but then offers them a food replicator. Doesn't that mess with the Prime Directive?
The Prime Directive seems to mean different things at different times.
To different captains?
Well, it always means you can't interfere with a pre-warp civilization.
Okay.
But sometimes it also seems to mean you can't interfere with the internal politics of any civilization.
Okay.
But whether it has that expansive meaning does seem to vary based on the writers and the...
Yeah,
the argument would be that it seems the lizard people and the mouse people already have contact with the outside world beyond Starfleet. And also, it arguably seems that even if they didn't, which it seems like they do, but even if they didn't, what Mariner did has already so complicated the society that Freeman has to do something. Does that make sense?
Yeah, she's got to offer up something to handle the situation. Yes, I get it. Take a little trip to Home Depot, get you a food replicator. Here you are.
The thing I wanted to flag, so we get a holo Leonardo da Vinci here, who was also a big part of the holo cast on Star Trek Voyager. But it's very funny how much more Italian to holo da Vinci is in Lower Decks than he is in Voyager, where I believe he's played by John Rhys-Davies from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. I feel like in the holodeck, too, they just pick random characters to play, like, games with. I would do the same thing.
Yeah, like that famous scene of Data playing poker with, like, I think it's Newton, Einstein, and Stephen Hawking.
Right.
It is really amusing, too, that basically Boimler does in this episode what everybody gets really offended about Reginald Barclay for doing in the first Barclay episode in season 3 of Next Gen. But... he's created duplicates of everybody on the ship, but he's just done it for the purposes of Brown Nose. Whereas Barclay does it to play out these like weird power fantasies. And it's how much of a distinction is that really?
It's really not. It's sad too that some people would have this level of anxiety that they would need to go around and practice this. But I mean, this could be beneficial for some people, Bob. I'm starting to think this is the way we need to go.
That's true. That's true. I did want to ask, Matt, so... Is Mariner, I think this was hilarious in 2020 when we first saw this. In 2024, it hits a little different. So is Mariner having the holodeck auto-generate a next generation movie? Is that a little less funny now in the age of ChatGPT?
Yeah, I feel like we hit like a hidden message here, but then I realized, yeah, you're right. This came out a long time ago, so it's really not the hidden message, or were they just ahead of their time?
Maybe, but I don't think they were thinking in that way because it's not specific, right? It's just a general point.
Yeah.
And presumably it is something that basically seen the holodeck do in other shows before.
Right.
Maybe not just such a parodic extent.
I mean, we are moving in that direction with things where you can just auto-generate pretty much code, and any code that they auto-generate can then produce what you're seeing on the screen or in a holodeck or...
Yeah, but I think the point is that stuff, to me at least, you can disagree, but to me the point is that stuff is always going to, that's auto-generated, it's always going to suck. It's interesting that in the script is going on auto-generation, right? But all the jokes and all the parody and all the layers of references, which we're only going to get into a few, but all of that is happening because of canny writers in a writer's room and not because of the auto-generation as a fiction.
Right. Right. And that's the thing, too, that Bob, see, but are we going to grow so accustomed to that that we just accept it? And that's what it becomes. So that's the scary part.
I don't think we are, though. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think we are.
Because if they slowly start introducing more of it to us and we start not to note it and we don't notice it, it's subtle.
Yeah, but people do notice already, maybe not in every single instance with laser precision, but people already usually notice when something is lazy or crappy or auto-done, right? Look how badly Madam Webb did.
Or do they, Bob? That's the question.
Yeah, generally they do. I think, and they don't reward that stuff. So granted, I do think there is a capitalist class who has invested so much money into AI that they're determined to shove it down our throats in every conceivable circumstance, even when it makes no sense or is actually even not profitable just because they've invested so much into it that they can't admit that it is not profitable. So that's a problem. And in order to fix that, we need to do what Luigi did.
All right, Bob. Well, you got it right there. And I'm sure Star Trek will come up with some Luigi-centric episode.
He's a hero, as far as I'm concerned. Honorary member of Starfleet.
But we never give Luigi credit. Mario
was
cool.
He really anchored that video game, man.
He did. Mario was cool with the red, but Luigi, he had it going on.
What are some other hidden messages? I think I missed the joke about Zahn the first time I saw this episode.
So Zahn is from...
Do you remember Star Trek Phase 2?
That was supposed to be the sequel to the original Star Trek from the early 70s.
It was supposed to be a new Star Trek show. And I think basically everybody was supposed to come back, but Leonard Nimoy wouldn't come back for a show.
And Zahn was going to be his replacement. He was going to be the first officer.
Yeah, I think a full Vulcan.
Oh, boy.
And then in the motion picture, do you remember the transporter accident where the Vulcan science officer and the admiral, who's Kirk's lover, get killed?
Yes, I do remember that.
That character is not called Zahn. I want to say his name is called, like, Sonarak. But basically, that character was meant to be Zahn and maybe even was played by the actor who was going to play Zahn.
Oh, poor dude, man. He had dreams.
Yeah, yeah. Another little Easter egg from the movies I liked is that Vindicta, which is Mariner's Khan personality, but Vindicta is quoting the Tempest General Chang's dials from Star Trek VI, and I really enjoyed that. So, Matt, what was funnier to you? Was it Tendi being uncomfortable around Vindicta wanting to take slaves, or was it Tendi finding out at least about Hollow Chief Lundy being anti-Orion?
Yep. The whole anti-Orion stuff was weird in this season. I guess because we've seen so much of the future with Tendi and dealing with her culture and everything. Like, we didn't know much too when this dropped about Orions, or as much, correct?
Yeah, that's true, because they only appeared in, not really, but sort of in one original series episode, then the animated version. And then they're in a couple Enterprise episodes, but not that, including in one where Big Show plays an Orion.
Oh, yeah.
But they're only in a couple, and we don't learn that much about the culture, as I recall.
Back then, I was probably just wondering, okay, maybe there's some, it's obvious they were trying to play some tension there with her, with her past.
I also like Tendi doing the woke skull thing. And she's like, there are some Orions who have not been up to 5 years.
A whole 5 years. Nice.
Oh, man. Did you feel like Holoshack's getting killed by a Borg head bomb was a Breaking Bad tribute?
It was awesome. At first, I got Medusa vibes when he had that thing out.
Oh, yeah.
And I was thinking, what is going on? Is he going to, like, Borgify people? What is this? That was cool. And then Shax had a great line right up before this where he says, when you get to hell, tell the Par Wraith that Shax sent you. Special delivery from Bajor. That's awesome. They just need, like, a highlight video on YouTube of Shax and his one-liners.
Yeah, oh man, there should be a sizzle reel for Shax on YouTube for sure. Another joke I dearly loved was Rutherford's, you can do all sorts of beaming stuff in a movie.
Well, yeah, duh.
Yeah. So Matt, we had the final fight between Freeman and Vindicta. I got a lot of Batman Mask of the Phantasm vibes off of it. Did you?
I don't know, Bob, that was like Superman 3 all the way. Where he fights himself.
I don't think I've ever seen Superman 3.
Oh, God,
Bob. You
made
me watch it as a kid.
Oh, God.
Is that the one with Richard Pryor?
Yes, yeah, on Richard Pryor. There's like one good scene in it. It's where Superman fights himself.
Another little bit of trivia we learned is that Mariner was dressing as a child as a character named Toby Targ.
Yeah, that's a Klingon pet or something like that.
I like that as Star Trek's version of Bluey.
It's your little pet Klingon.
Did you like at the end when Boimler tried to assassinate Freeman with chocolate chip cookies, Jet foils him, and then he gets Boimler in that Ken Shamrock deal?
Man, Jet, too. Going back and we're watching these, Jet's all over the place. He's got supporting character status.
Yeah, it's almost like he falls off. He's a lot more prominent in the first season, it feels like.
Yeah. Well, Bob, I'm going to say this, though. For this particular episode in the first season, my character of the episode is the Cerritos itself. Because we get one of those motion picture style going around the Cerritos to look at each part of it.
What is it Boimler says to Freeman? She sure is a classy lady.
Yeah, exactly. That is why the Cerritos is the character of the episode.
Nice, nice. I'm definitely going to go with Vindicta. Now, look, slavery is bad, but it's very fun to take slaves as a pirate in a holodeck game. Okay.
Man, if they ever create holodecks, you know, once AI takes over, going to be, they're going to have some crazy laws in place if this doesn't go down all the time.
Well, it's an interesting argument. The argument would be like, should it be used as an outlet so people get their worst and sickest and antisocial desires? Or is actually that theory wrong and it's not an outlet? It just lets you heighten those desires and then it makes you want to practice them in real life. It's an interesting philosophical and psychological debate that I don't actually know enough to have a position on. I just think it's an interesting debate.
Well, the real question is, how can I make money off of it?
And that's why only Luigi will say
it. Yeah, exactly. All right, Bob.
Well, it's been a joy revisiting Lower Decks Episode 9 from Season 1 with you, Matt. We're going to be on a two-week hiatus just for me traveling in the holidays. Sorry about that, everybody. But we will be back 2 weekends from now with our coverage of the last episode of Lower Decks and the last episode of Lower Decks Season 1, and then we'll be back a week later with our retrospective of all 5 seasons of Lower Decks. We really appreciate you listening, and join us on Uncanny Treks for our coverage of other pop culture things.
Thanks for listening.